Welcome to this episode of Sisters Sidebar with Jill Winebanks and me, Joyce Vance. If you've got a question for us, that's what this episode of Sisters Sidebar is all about. Please email your questions to us at sistersinlaw@politicon.com or tag us on social media using hashtag sistersinlaw. And now you can do more than just type your questions. Your voices matter to us, and we love hearing you ask your questions. So for Sisters Sidebar, we've set up a way for us and for our listeners to hear you ask your questions. Email us a voice memo using one of your notes apps, and we might play it on the show. And now let's get started and do exactly that, because Jill, to get started today, we've got an audio question for you from Gina.
Hello, sisters-in-law. I love the show, and I'm so grateful for you all. I do have a question about Trump's false claims regarding voter fraud. I am wondering why it isn't that we cannot sue on his false claims so that in the courts they could be brought to attention the truth about whether those claims are true or false, and if that's even worth it, and if not, why not? Thanks so much for everything you do. I appreciate you all. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Gina, thank you for that question. It's really interesting, but some things are wrong politically, wrong morally, but they aren't illegal. And unfortunately, lying to the public isn't one of those things that's illegal. Lying to the court, lying in a situation where you have to take an oath, those are wrong. But as I found out during Watergate, impeachment is the solution for a president who lies to the public. Impeachment or losing your next election. But you can't charge somebody with lying to the public. Joyce, there's a question for you from Julia, who asks, is it accepted in jurisprudence to invoke laws, declarations, positions, etc., from our history that date before the Constitution to make a ruling?
You know, this is such a great question because we live in the era of the history and tradition Supreme Court, right? And so the answer to your question, Julia, is absolutely yes, but with an important qualification. Because American courts, including the Supreme Court, they routinely consult legal and political materials that predate the Constitution when they're interpreting constitutional provisions or laws. But those materials are generally historical evidence of meaning, and they're not themselves controlling law. They add to our understanding of the law. They are not the law. So here's a great example. English common law and statutes that predate the Constitution, they can help us understand legal terms that the framers inherited. When you come to the Fourth Amendment, there's all sorts of habeas corpus law, jury rights, due process that's animated by these kind of historical inquiries. And it really has become a big deal with this current Supreme Court because their originalist methodology has made historical evidence considerably more important. We saw that in the 2022 term of court in two cases. In New York State Rifle versus Bruin, that's the Second Amendment case where the court expressly examined English law going back centuries. They looked at colonial regulation and founding era laws to decide what the scope of the Second Amendment was. And of course, we also saw it a little bit tragically in Justice Alito's majority opinion in Dobbs when he examined English common law going back centuries, relied on a scholar who believed women were witches, and also used American law before and around ratification of the 14th Amendment to reach the decision that he reached. So yes, increasingly, this is a feature of the landscape. Well, Jill, our next question comes for you from Larry in San Jose, California. And Larry asks, according to the Wall Street Journal, Democrats are preparing multi-front investigations into the Trump administration should they win the House majority in November. Any idea of what the focus might be?
Man, there are so many possibilities to answer that question. And there are so many that I would love to see. I would love to see some examination of finances. I mean, I'm one who believes in following the money, so I'd like to see some investigations started about where is Donald Trump's money come from and where is his son's business money coming from. That would certainly be top of my list for things to investigate. But I think I'd love to hear from our listeners to send me a list of what are your favorite things that you would like to see Democrats, if they take control of the House and the Senate, or even just one, where they have subpoena power and can call people in to investigate what has been going on for the last 2 years of the second Trump administration. Joyce, there's an audio question for you. Comes from June.
Hi, sisters-in-law. My name is June, and I am from Prince George's County, Maryland. I am a retired assistant U.S. attorney, having spent 25 years, 7 months, and 3 days in the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Columbia. When I was in AUSA, we were encouraged to buy personal malpractice insurance. My question to you is, what about the U.S. attorney herself, in this case, Jeanine Pirro? Do they get malpractice insurance, and can they be sued and held liable? I don't feel like researching this myself, but I know you all have the answer. Thanks.
Hey, June, thanks for the question. It's always good to hear from former assistant United States attorneys. You and I spent just about the same amount of time at the Justice Department. You were in D.C. I was in Birmingham, Alabama, but I bet we had the same personal malpractice insurance. I carried that insurance, I think, from about, 30 seconds after I entered service at the Justice Department, and I carried it to the point of your question. The entire time that I was the United States attorney in Birmingham. But the reason I carried it, I just have to be blunt about this and say it wasn't out of concern that we were doing anything wrong. We carried insurance out of concern that we might become the victim of people that sue in a predatory fashion. And that happens sometimes in the Justice Department. I actually had somebody who kept trying to sue me in a bunch of different venues, along with, I think, every justice on the Alabama Supreme Court and some other state court judges. And people will get these ideas in their mind. And it gets expensive to defend yourself in cases like that. And so really, the malpractice insurance in many ways is just protecting your family from having to pay the cost of frivolous lawsuits. But the point of your question is a little bit different. Can a U.S. attorney be sued and held liable? There are very limited situations where that can happen because of the qualified immunity that we expend. But in cases of deliberate misconduct, there is some precedent. Usually it's the Justice Department itself that gets sued, and it steps into the shoes of its employees who are granted immunity. But on rare occasions, there is, I think, the possibility that a U.S. attorney could be sanctioned, maybe by the state that bars them. That's really the biggest option for accountability for a U.S. attorney who engages misconduct. And just, I can only think of sort of extremely rare hypotheticals where someone would act outside the line and scope of their duty and might make themselves liable in another lawsuit. Everyone wants to curl up in a comfy bed, so having the perfect mattress for your sleep habits, it's a must. Great sleep is critical to success, and there is nothing better for sleep than a Helix mattress. I first heard about Helix when they asked to sponsor our show, but as y'all know, we're pretty selective here at Hashtag Sisters-in-Law. We wanted to try the mattresses out. So I took Helix's quiz to tailor my sleep style to the right mattress, and I got matched with the Helix Midnight Mattress. I've been getting the greatest sleep of my life ever since it arrived. Tossing and turning, that is a thing of the past. My whole family now has Helix mattresses, and they have all found their ultimate fit.
Joyce isn't the only one. Helix is the most awarded mattress ever by reviewers like Forbes and Wired. They have over 20 different models, and you'll love how they combine memory foam and individually wrapped steel coils for the optimal blend of softness and support. There are even enhanced cooling features to keep you from getting too warm during the summer months.
Making the switch is such an upgrade. Since we've gone over to Helix, we've heard so many stories of people seeing incredible improvements in the quality of their sleep on their wearable devices, thanks to their Helix mattresses. and add that to free shipping in the United States with seamless delivery that comes direct to your door, a quick and easy setup, and a no-fuss trial policy, that makes Helix a really easy choice.
With Helix, you can rest easy with their seamless returns and exchanges. Their Happy with Helix guarantee offers a risk-free, customer-first experience with 120-night sleep trial and a limited lifetime warranty to ensure you're completely satisfied. So don't wait. Snuggle up on an incredible mattress this summer and beyond. Take advantage of their Best of Web Labor Day sale and go to helixsleep.com/sisters for 27% off site-wide, exclusive for listeners of our show. That's helixsleep.com/sisters for 27% off site-wide, exclusive for listeners of our show. Make sure you enter our show name after checkout so they know we sent you. Again, helixsleep.com/sisters. And you can find the link in our show notes. Joyce, we have a great question for you from Dean Gallagher 65 at Blue Sky Social, who asks, can Blanche extend presidential immunity to private entities? That would essentially gut Congress's constitutional oversight authority.
Well, hey, Dean, short answer, it's not really Todd Blanche who gets to do this. Immunity is essentially a decision for judges to make. But I like the way that you phrased your question because the attorney general could extend immunity. It wouldn't really be worth the paper it's written on, as a court could overrule him or could change the decision about who's entitled to this extension of executive privilege if there's any challenge. And of course, there would be. I think you're probably referring to the new OLC position, the Office of Legal Counsel decision issued by Blanche's DOJ that says that executive privilege can cover the president's communications with private advisors. DOJ can assert that position, but Blanche cannot simply extend presidential immunity to private entities as a matter of law. And what might the courts do when the issue comes up? Look as to where they might come down. If the executive branch could convert private actors into extensions of the presidency just by labeling them presidential advisors, it would dramatically impair both congressional and constitutional oversight of the presidency. That's probably what this administration has in mind. But when the case is presented to a court, they'll be thinking about this president and future presidents. And might you want to have, for instance, a president, you know, Kamala Harris or a president J.B. Pritzker or a president Josh Shapiro, take your pick of any of the promising Democratic potential candidates. Maybe the court doesn't want to see them with that level of protection. So we always knew that Trump would try to push this. In some ways, it's essential to his shtick. Jill was talking in our episode last Saturday about the issues involving crypto with Kim. And this might be one of those areas where the White House would want to protect outside conversations. But I think the courts won't be as eager to do that, especially because Trump's time in office is coming to an end. And hopefully with that, the end of Trump rules and the presidency of grift, and we'll be able to see a certain restoration of normalcy. Jill, the last question for you is also an audio question. This one comes from Anna.
Hi, sisters. Thank you so much for your show. I love it, and I listen every week. My name is Anna. I'm from Cedarburg, Wisconsin, and I recently discovered the case called McFaul v. Shimp from 1978, which, as I understand, established that a person cannot be legally forced to donate tissue or bone marrow. Doing so would violate fundamental principles of bodily integrity. So my question is, why does this precedent not apply to women seeking abortion care? Thanks so much.
I'm so glad that you know about the McFaul case, Anna, and that you're asking. In McFaul, the court said that no one could be forced to donate part of their body, any of its tissues, to someone else for that other person's benefit. And the same has been argued to be true, that you cannot be forced to continue to carry tissue. And that has been used in briefs in support of abortion access. So it's a very good question why it's okay to say, no, a brother does not have to donate any tissue to save his brother who will die without the organ transplant and who in fact did die because the court said he can't be forced to do it. Why should a woman be forced to carry to term a fetus that is not viable, for example? So it's particularly applicable in cases where the fetus is going to miscarry or, in other words, not survive. So I think it's a great question, and I hope that someday courts will apply that to women's bodies as well as to men's. Thank you for listening to Sisters Sidebar with Joyce Vance and me, Jill Wine Banks. Keep sending in questions as good as this week's questions for next week's show. And if you send a voice note, you might hear your own voice on our show in the next episode. You can follow Sisters Sidebar and hashtag Sisters-in-Law wherever you listen to podcasts or on YouTube. Please give us a 5-star review. It really helps others to find the show. And please show some love to this week's sponsor, Helix. The link is in our show notes, and please support them because they make this show possible. Don't forget to pick up Sisters-in-Law merch and other goodies at politicon.com/merch. And we'll see you every week on Wednesdays and Saturdays for new episodes of hashtag Sisters-in-Law and Sisters Sidebar.
What are you doing tonight?
Joyce, I have such a great weekend planned. My goddaughter's brother is getting married for the first time, and the whole weekend is filled with family.
I love how you say
that,
for the first time.
Well, because my goddaughter is old enough that you would think it'd be a second marriage, but it isn't. But the whole family is here. My college roommate, who's the mother of my goddaughter, her husband, her daughter, who is my grand goddaughter, whom I'm very close with. I had dinner with her last night. Tonight, I'll be seeing the whole family. The wedding is on Sunday. So there's events planned for the whole weekend, and it's just a joy. And because this will happen before the show airs, I'm not wearing it now, but we are all considered pod sisters, not podcast, but pod sisters. We wear a necklace that's a pod, and the sister of the bride is going to be inducted into our pod sisterhood. So it's going to be a really exciting weekend. What about you? Do you have great plans?
Last weekend I spent a lot of time kayaking. I'm in the middle of doing research for my second book. And so the way I'm getting myself to work really intensively is work hard, play hard, right? And so I went out and I had this incredible day in my kayak where we were teaching ourselves to flip our kayaks over and then get back in with nobody helping you and learning how to do rescues with other people. It was very dramatic. The first time I ditched my kayak over, I wasn't sure I was going to have the courage to do it. I mean, we were out. We weren't like in the ocean with waves. We were in the bay, so it was a little bit calmer. But, you know, it took me a second to decide to pitch over. But here's the sad truth. I'm now of the age where that leads to a few sore muscles.
Oh.
And I thought I might just sort of spoil myself this weekend, take one of my kids shopping. My youngest needs some work clothes. Spend a lot of time cooking, just be a real homebody. And I've got this, you know, I can't believe I left my knitting across the room while we were taping. I've got this big cushy cashmere scarf. I thought I might go ahead and get that as close to finished as possible. So you're going to be out being formal and fancy with people, but I'm going to be at home in a pair of sweatpants.
Well, this is a casual group of people, so nothing too dressy, but it's going to be just a joyous, wonderful family event. But I want to see pictures. You have to somehow record your ditching your kayak.
You know, we have no pictures because when you go over, you can't go over with your phone.
So yes, you can. I have it from my trip to Alaska where I have a waterproof cover, but I have to go now because I'm doing a radio show and they're calling me right this minute.
Bye. See you next week.